Welcome to Spark TO. Meet the speakers who are sparking conversation at Spark the Change Toronto. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Spark TO. This is the podcast for Spark the Change Toronto, where we welcome our incredible guests, our speakers that are going to be enthralling us all in just a few weeks. Spark the Change Toronto takes place June 13th and 14th this year, when we're back at the Ontario Science Centre, which is a completely fun space. And it's kind of good that we're going to be at a science center because Dr. Fromm specializes in managing zombies. And so the great thing about that is that we're going to be in a place that, you know, can handle an apocalypse, which is great. So welcome, Dr. Fromm.
Thank you.
And pleasure Audrey.
And Audrey, yeah, sorry. We have an additional guest to the video cast.
A furry friend. And so I was just going to let everybody know. So Dr. Fromm is speaking. You're on day two. Which is June the 14th, and you're opening, which is wonderful. So we get to kick the day off with some zombies. And so I'm just going to read the topic that you're going to be covering for us at Spark. And I can read it without my glasses, so I'm kind of impressed. So five qualities you will need to combat the techno-zombie apocalypse and support further change, which I'm a little bit of a zombie Marvel kind of thing. So I'm like, ooh, zombies. Dr. Jen Fromm recognizes that for all our love of technology-driven change, we're heading into a zombie apocalypse. Our worlds are jam-packed with relentless change and with technology innovation and market forces. Wait, let me just read that again. We have to fix our grammar. Our worlds are jam-packed with relentless change and with technology innovation and market forces creating a lot of volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity. The one thing that remains constant, though, is the need to support ourselves and others through change, even when that change is exciting, innovative, and growth-focused. However, science is starting to show us that the latest technological advances are starting to come at the cost of our humanness. This means we are at risk of not being able to support ourselves and others. To save us from the impending doom, Dr. Jen takes us through the five qualities we need to protect, to ensure we can continue to be present, human, and supportive through change. And so, one of the cool things is you are at the forefront of this humanness and supporting, and you shared a very interesting fact about why you are Dr. Jen, which I think we might as well pull that in now. So
yeah, sure. Yeah. So I did my doctorate in change communication back in the year 2001, or I started in 2001, finished 2004. And part of what was driving me with that was as a change practitioner, there was a lot of talk. Best practice was communicate, communicate, communicate. Mm-hmm. But based in the organizations I was working in with relentless change, that was actually a recipe for high anxiety. And I was really curious around what were the different change communication models that would support continuous change and make for healthier workforces. So yeah, that was way back. Goodness.
It's not that far.
It feels it now. Yeah. And so of course I was really lucky to, you know, after I finished that, I did work in university sectors as an academic, but then I transitioned back out into practitioner land after a few years of that, and yeah, have a lot of fun with it.
Very cool. And that's, yeah. It's interesting because one of the words that jumped out at me when I was reading that was relentless. Mm-hmm. And I think people underestimate the impact that technology is having on us from my kids are 21 and 20. So my kids grew up without iPads and phones and what have you. And you see families now and they're all on devices and you see, you know, little kids on devices with earphones and what have you. And then now you see that creeping into the behavior in the workplace. And
absolutely,
the ability to communicate is, I think, on a rapid decline, which is frightening. And so with that impact now, we see now, so the good news is that you started your PhD and, you know, defended your thesis in a time where technology was just starting to really intrude into everyday life. And yeah. you were a forerunner to go, that's going to have some problems.
Yeah. It was interesting too, because one of the things I was really interested in, at the risk of, you know, sounding a little bit nerdy now, was dialogic change communication. So what does communication look like as part of dialogue? And that was very much before we had Web 2.0. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't have the technology platforms that actually encouraged or enabled dialogue. So the commenting back and forth, we didn't have the norms of enterprise social networks, those kind of things happening. So for me, it was an awesome transition. It was just fascinating because I could take what I had learned around dialogic change communication mm-hmm. and overlay that on technology to be at the forefront of using those kind of channels. You know, that's why I was a really early blogger. You know, Twitter, that whole, I've always really, you know, I don't know what to do in an organization when they don't have a social network. I'm like, we're back to putting posters up in the bathrooms, like, yeah. so hard. But what I do know is that, you know, I think for me, what was really critical in working with this relentless change was our capacity to keep talking, to yes. keep having conversations. You know, to move away from pushing information and receiving information, but more into a space of regular sense making, if only so that you have ownership of what the changes are coming through, you know, and Ooh. That you actually create the changes coming through. I think that was a really important piece for me, was dialogic change communication isn't about two-way. It's a constructivist view. And with dialogue, you create the changes that you want to see in the organization.
See, that's so I take notes when I'm speaking yeah. to some people, because then I have stuff that I can use yeah. later. And it's interesting. So we as the Spark team, so this is actually a perfect example. What we're doing right now is a perfect example of what you're talking about. So I didn't mention at the beginning that Dr. Fromm is joining me from Australia. And she's very kindly woken up very early in the morning. So it's 6:30 a.m. your time?
It is, correct.
And what day of the week is it for you?
It is now Wednesday.
Wednesday. So it's yes, Tuesday. Yeah. yeah. It's Tuesday afternoon here in Burlington, Ontario. And Australia, it's 6:30 in the morning. And the amazing thing is, so I would say that this is one of the positive advances of technology, is that we are able to connect globally and share these ideas. And that part is fantastic. And though we're both trying to remember to look up at the webcam so that we are talking to each other, but we're not looking at each other. This couldn't have happened 15 years ago. You know, no. The technology and the infrastructure didn't exist. Mm. And so that I see as a positive, because there's still a conversation. We're still face to face, exchange of ideas. It's when I see in the workplace, and I did my postgraduate in corporate communications, and I graduated in 2012. So that's now 7 years ago. And the decline from when I graduated in 1996 with my medical office administrator due to technology. So my team and I, right, for school are sitting around and we're face to face because I'm 40 odd at the time. And I'm still in my 40s, but anyway, so I'm encouraging face-to-face conversation because that's what I know as a means of communication. That's what I've been taught and grew up with. And then you look to the right and you see this table of youngins with their phone. And the scary thing would be they're probably texting each other at the same table, yeah. And I just think to myself, what opportunities are they losing to enrich their day and to engage in this, you know, this communication? And if they as a team are working on a project, you made a really excellent point, which I love, ownership of those changes through mm-hmm. communication. Mm-hmm. Are teams as invested when they are distracted by technology?
And this brings in the zombification, right?
Oh, for sure.
So that distractedness that you're talking about, that mindful, you know, mindless, passive consumption of messages and, you know, those kind of things is what we're at risk of. Because I would hate, you know, with this talk that I'm about to give, I would hate people to think that I'm anti-technology. It's not that at all. I'm a massive geek, right? Love it, love it, love it. But what I'm super conscious of is the need to be mindful and intentional in how you use that technology.
True.
And, you know, I've often said, you know, people say, what's the next evolution for change practitioners? And I said, you know, the future is this desperate need for stability practitioners.
Yes.
So how do we move into a space of saying, actually, you don't have to change, or maybe we want to say no at this point in order to get the benefits out of what we've done so far. So the ability to hold your ground mm-hmm. is going to be really a critical future skill, if not a present skill. You know?
Well, not innovating just because it's the
mindlessness.
Thing to do.
Yeah, the zombie, yeah. Zombie innovating. You know.
Completely agree. And I know I've been very fortunate that I came into the Spark the Change team with no experience in change management or agile, which I'm still not not a practitioner, but I am an advocate and a passionate advocate, because I think the challenges now are greater than ever as far as the impact of anxiety and the impact of lack of communication on innovating. Mm. And when you try and jump on a train just for the sake of saying you had a seat, you know, you are looking at a train wreck, which is a shame.
Yeah. So, well, a very uncomfortable ride. It'll be a bit crowded.
and I don't do well with people in my space. So I'd be like, you need to back off, find your own. So I'm wondering now, I love that you did this about the humanness and recognizing that human condition. And I work a lot with the autism community, and autism tends to have a scooch of anxiety attached to it, but we're seeing this massive growth in general population of mental health issues and what have you. And I wonder, I mean, you are the expert in this field, so I wonder, you know, what are you seeing as far as people's mental health and communication within the workplace?
I think, so first of all, clarify, not an expert in mental health.
Oh, no, sorry.
But certainly that plays into the space. Anytime you work in change and transformation, that is one of the risks that you face into.
Yeah.
I think there's two things happening. One, we have a broader awareness and a language, a syntax, if you will, mm-hmm. for talking about mental health that we didn't have when I started off in the workforce in the 80s, right? Mm-hmm. And so just by virtue of, you know, that we now know how to label something, or we know what to look for in the language, means we see more of it.
True.
So I'm not sure to what extent we're seeing more problems than we ever did, or is it just we have a language to describe what we see, and an awareness of the negative consequences of it. Having said that, I do think that considerable change in an organization, poorly managed, facilitated, implemented, whatever language you want to use, recognizing that, you know, there's people who get a little bit tetchy about the you can't manage change, poorly introduced has high risk of increasing anxiety and fear and concern in the workforce, which gets in the way of productivity, which gets in the way of joy, which gets in the way of doing really cool stuff. And we know this because of the way that our brain perceives threats. I think I'm not sure to what extent it's exponentially greater, or whether it's we just have the language for it. But regardless, it's there, which means there is a duty of care to address it.
I completely agree.
You know, from an ethical perspective and from a sustainability. I mean, people spend so much time at work. Don't you want them to have a good time, to be enjoying their life? You know, for me, we talked about this a little bit before. One of my core values is joy. So, of course, I have a cognitive bias and a lens which goes, are people having a joyous time at work? If they're not, there's something wrong. And, you know, that might be an extreme lens on it.
I don't think so. And I think that's one thing that a lot of organizations miss. And maybe, you know, maybe it's not the joy word, but at least if you're if your employment is meeting some of your core values on some level, that's key. And if you don't feel heard, and if you don't feel like you're being supported, like you mentioned, and you feel like change is happening to you and not with you,
yep.
then, you know, and nobody's talking about it. So like that whole iceberg situation where all the decisions are being made up here, but it's the people under the water who are now drowning because nobody's helping them through it. And nobody's going, well, wait a second. Does it make sense for us up here to be making these decisions when it's the people down here that need to implement?
Mm. And I think the other thing is we can move right away from, you know, the feel good factor and the well-being and what we should be doing and just look at it financially, right? Mm-hmm. From a company perspective, if you have an increase in health claims
yep.
or stress leave or those kind of things, it means your insurance premiums go up for the next 5 to 6 years, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah, absolutely. Once you start claiming, it gets very expensive to insure going on. So it's if we want to be really completely put the people to one side and just look at the numbers on it, it certainly makes sense to be investing in the experience of our people.
You just got me thinking. So I said to Dr. Fromm before we started, I tend to take notes, and I do that simply because I don't want to interrupt you and I don't want to forget. But that's one thing in Canada that we struggle a bit with across the country is that we have a free healthcare system, right? Essentially a free healthcare system, although we pay taxes through the bedunk to have the free healthcare system. And that builds in this sense of entitlement and this, you know, misunderstanding of what that means. And so the challenge is that we are in a system of reactive medicine.
Yes.
So we wait until we get sick because that's free, right? It's free to fix that. It's more expensive in the long term in other ways, but we see it as free. Versus being proactive and either looking at, not alternative, I don't like that word, but supportive healthcare or what have you. And I think if organizations would look at having change practitioners and those kinds of things as a proactive measure to reducing, you know, challenges in the organization and what have you, and addressing those critical load moments, you know, when your company grows up to 50 people, you're facing a critical load moment. 120, you're facing another critical load moment. And if you're not proactive in having the conversations that you can facilitate, that Spark as an organization is trying to help people facilitate, then you're in reactive mode, and that's not a good place to be.
Yeah. Well, it's risk mitigation, you know, again, to get very corporate.
No, but that's true.
How do we mitigate the risks, you know, and it's through change practitioners.
Do they even recognize? So you got me thinking. I love it when speakers get me thinking. So do organizations, are they even having the conversations? You're either really happy or you're frozen, one of the two. There we go. Where they understand that lack of communication is a risk. Have you run into that?
I'm just getting internet breaking.
Uh-oh. Australia down. And see if Australia reconnects. We'll be right back after these messages. So, hey, everybody, we had a little bit of a glitch. Those darn Aussies and their internet, I tell you, they're just trouble. Trouble with a capital Barbie.
So, this is where I get political. I'm going to be political, Elizabeth.
Yes.
And say we can blame the NBN.
I don't know what that is, but sure.
No, I know. It was my subversive moment.
Okay. We don't want to cause an international incident, but I'm on board. So... But where we had a little skippy-do when we were talking about the proactive versus reactive and risk management and how organizations should really view a lack of communication practices as part of their risk management and why. And so I'm going to zoom it back to you, no pun intended, and how do you end up within an organization helping them recognize the risk of bad communication?
Yeah, look, I think how do you end up? inevitably leadership bring you in for a pain point or a problem that they're foreseeing. Fear is usually a driver of it. So that's how you end up in there. Where you go from there can be very different, because often what you see as actually this is the way forward is different to what they thought it would be. And it is inevitably linked to this notion of being more human. That there is not some, you know, it's, and I think one of the questions I often get asked is how do we move the middle management, the frozen middle, right? Well, you know, from my perspective, if you improve the top layer and you empower the bottom layer, the middle falls, right? Let's stop blaming the middle for why they're not moving. It's inevitably that leadership behaviors need to change.
It's a chipwich situation.
Yeah. So,
do you have chipwiches in Australia?
No, we don't. We don't. Explain, because we're going
just to give context.
Yeah, we're going to share with my podcast audience as well. So you might want to explain that.
So a chipwich, I think we still have them in Canada, is essentially a full chocolate chip cookie, and quite hard ice cream in the middle, and then rolled in more chocolate chips around the...
This might be breakfast time in Australia, but that sounds glorious.
It's a large amount of happy, but... The experience improves exponentially when you get a bit of a thaw, when you get a bit of a give to the bite, you know, when you're trying to gnaw on it and it's just this solid frozen hunk.
Yeah.
It's a combination of a freeze headache and sore teeth.
Yeah.
And it's that bit of a thaw, which I think, you know, we can call it the chipwich attitude, that you have to be willing to give a little. You have to be willing to onboard new tools and new ideas and what have you in order to make the experience less headache inducing.
Yeah, pretty much.
Very cool. Very cool. Okay. So we have the advantage. We have a few minutes left, but we have the advantage of not only do we get you on day two of Spark, which is amazing, but you are also offering a half-day workshop on the 15th.
This is true.
It is. Would I lie to you? I would not do that. So for those of us who are going to be fortunate enough to be there, we're going to get to experience you. But could you share a little bit about the workshop you're going to be offering on the 15th?
Yeah, because
it's different than your Spark topic.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a little bit different. What I'm doing in the workshop is how do we build change capability through using a micro-learning approach? This has been born of a very regular pain point I'm seeing. So once upon a time, we used to get called and said, you know, can you come in? Can you do a workshop on change for our leaders or our managers and, you know, build their knowledge around change so they can be more change resilient or change ready or any of those great jargony kind of things.
Yeah.
Problem is people don't have the time to be sitting in workshops all day long.
No.
You know, bless the people who are going to show up on a Saturday for a half day with me. But in general, in our organizations, we don't have time. But not only that, the way that we are processing new information is changing. So the value of having people in a room for the whole day is limited in terms of brain functioning. So the likelihood that somebody is going to retain that knowledge and then use it is very limited.
Ooh.
So this introduced the value of a micro-learning approach. And micro-learning is really about how do we scaffold new knowledge in bite-sized pieces? And how do we, you know, self-directed learning. So how do we practice and experiment with new concepts, get feedback really fast, integrate that into our next level of knowledge and scaffold the learning. And so this is a piece that one of my colleagues, Lena Ross, we have a new business that we're launching, which is the Agile Change Leadership Institute. And we pick that up in there. But to be honest, we're really impatient. We want to give you the skill set to do it in your organizations because it's the quickest way we know to building capability, you know, globally at the moment. So we're effectively coming out and showing you everything that we know, how to do it. We'll be giving you templates of how you do it in your own organization. And go and have some fun and build change capability in a brain-friendly way. So no zombies, no zombies in the room.
That sounds better than a chip witch, I have to tell you. You know, less fattening, more brain enriching.
Yeah.
And that's, I find that now more. I was a Girl Guide leader for 10 years. And so we had to do micro learning because we had 40 minutes to impart lessons and what have you. But I think now with the origins of our conversation around the advent and increasing use of technology, it has, I would say, negatively impacted people's attention span and their willingness to sit through, you know, an 8-hour workshop, which 100% has benefits, you know, and it's, and so it's interesting that you've recognized that and created a tool that embraces that, you know, more focused way of learning so that people can still, you know, impart these things under their organization, but, you know, aren't feeling constrained by what a full day would require or what have you. And that's one of the biggest things for Spark the Change. And we have a, I don't know if we're doing it this year, to be honest with you, but we have an offer every single year that if somebody has a takeaway from Spark the Change and they apply it to their organization and it's successful, then they can apply for an award that we do. And they can also apply to speak the next year about how they use their learning.
That's so fantastic.
Well, you know what? I can say I work with an incredible team. I'm extremely fortunate. You know, we have Jason Little, Hazel van der Werken, Sue Johnston, Andrew Annett, John Button. And these are all talented, passionate people who, you know, they think the same way that you do, that everything is about learning and making it, you meet the person where they are in their learning. Mm-hmm. And we try and do that at Spark as well. That's why we don't have 3-hour long speakers. That's why we have broken down. That's why we've done it in a way that encourages more conversation so that there's less of us talking at you and more of us encouraging you to talk with each other and with us. And we're just, I'm the logistics person as far as, you know, I make sure you have somewhere to sleep, you have stuff to eat, and you have coffee.
Yep.
They're the geniuses that have all of this experience and knowledge and passion about sharing and improving things for people. So, yay. It's a good thing.
That's fabulous.
It is fabulous, and we're extremely fortunate. And I wanted to touch on one thing. We have drjenfram.com, and you said that was different from your other platform. And so I wondered if you could talk about that for a minute or two, and then we'll.
Of course. Yep. So I have two platforms that I do business from. So Conversations of Change is for change practitioners. And the purpose of that, so it's conversationsofchange.com.au, or people might be more familiar with the Facebook page on that. That explicit purpose is to provide content and material and resources to do change better. So it's very much focused at those people who work in change, regardless of what their role is. Mm-hmm. And then I have drjenfram.com, and from Dr. Jen Frum, that's where I work with leadership teams and boards on change advisory, change governance, you know, the speaking, the facilitation, and the executive coaching. And so that focus is more about how do we do a different kind of transformation? So rather than repeat, you know, the errors of the past, how do we do things differently going forward? Because as leaders, you're the ones to lead the change.
To turn that iceberg around.
Correct. That's it.
I'm just going to have a, I'm not going to do that. So it's a neat website, and it's, I love this to get a sense of how I roll. So you have a podcast that we need to chat about, because this is going to end up. And so Conversations of Change, I see it's on iTunes. Is it on any other platforms?
Oh, it's on all the platforms.
Okay.
Stitcher, etc. all where you normally find a podcast.
Okay. And so they just look for Conversations of Change with Dr. Jen Frum.
Yep, that's right.
There is a link on her Dr. Jen Fromm website. Listen to my podcast. And so if you're listening to us on Conversations of Change, hello from Canada. If you're listening to us on SoundCloud through Across the Desk and the Spark TO, then hello from Australia and Canada. I'm really excited to learn about zombies and how not to become one. And with a tech startup myself, I'm especially intrigued because I want to make sure that we are atypical in that situation. I just want to make sure that it's, you know, relatively open door and straight shooting conversation so that from the very beginning, people know it's WYSIWYG in here. So, yeah. So very cool. Thank you very much, Dr. Fromm. I really appreciate you.
You're very welcome. I can't wait to see everybody.
We're fun. We wear tiaras. Well, I wear a tiara. Other people wear like dangly suns, and it's an interesting situation in that Spark for Change Toronto is very serious about delivering a high quality event, very serious about the speakers that we bring in and what have you. But the actual event, we try and make it fun and relaxing and encourage communication. And if you're an introvert, we've got spaces for that. If you're an extrovert, we've got spaces for that. We have puzzle activities. We have tape things. Like, we just want to make sure that it's not a conference you've ever experienced before in a positive way. And that's why we're fortunate that we get speakers like you that come in that we know it's going to be a great experience and it's going to be worth people spending their 2 days with us. So
fantastic.
Very excited to see you in June. Thank you very much for joining me. And I'm just going to wrap up and say, everybody, thank you for listening to Spark TO. Again, if you're interested in joining us, you can visit sparkthechange.ca. Registration is still open. We are over 50% sold. And I guess we're just shy of 2-3 weeks before we hit the stage, which is incredibly quick. You can follow us on Twitter, SparkConf. And there's all whole bunch of ways to get in touch with us, but we will hope to see you there. Thank you again, Dr. Fromm, and I think we're going to say ta-ta. So bye-bye. You hang on for a second, and we're just going to let everybody else go. So thanks, everybody. Have a great day. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening, and please visit us at sparkthechangetoronto.ca to learn more, or you can follow us on Twitter at SparkConfTO.